It is 12 minutes past 8 Central African time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ahlan wa sahlan. Welcome to Radio Islam International. It is Sunday evening, the 21st of February, and we're coming to you live from our studios here in Johannesburg, South Africa, for an interesting show 2 hours ahead with thought-provoking content both from South Africa and abroad. This is what you can look forward to on the show that's beaming out live as we speak. We talk to Imtiaz Kaji, the nephew of the late Ahmed Timol. This evening, the focus of the discussion is Stalingrad tactics when it comes to the approaches used by former security branch officers in their fights or in the quests made to bring them to justice in South African courts since possibly the failure of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in bringing them to justice in this regard. But later on in the hour, we speak to Ismail Adam Patel, Friends of Al-Aqsa. In a few weeks' time, they're going to be launching a international Friends of Al-Aqsa, Al-Aqsa Week. And this is meant to obviously conscientize people all around the world regarding Masjid Al-Aqsa in a period where we have a considerable amount of threats related to the Masjid, but also at this particular moment in time, we would see typically in the month of Rajab people commemorating, just historically speaking, events of the Isra and Mi'raj. So an international campaign there with a strong virtual element, I would suspect. Ismail Adam Patel unpacks that for us, a very senior scholar out in Turkey passing away. We'll get the details on that. The Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, having attended that funeral today, why was this particular scholar so significant? We will find out about that just after nine. And then a new civilization, a new vision for Muslim civilization. We speak to Jahangir Mohammed of the Ayan Institute out in the United Kingdom. An in-depth look at the various problems plaguing the Muslim Ummah, movements that have been started, movements that have failed, and from a think tank point of view, they've put together a plan that they feel would be beneficial in trying to forge a new vision going forward, and you know, creating a semblance of unity and unification for the Muslim Ummah going forward. So all of that coming up on the show this evening from now until 10 p.m. live on our various platforms, as well as taking your feedback as well as your messages on 0727861548 or at Radio Islam on Twitter. Now, the former security branch officer, one Anastasio Rodriguez, made another appearance for his role in the murder of anti-apartheid activist Ahmed Timol at the Palm Ridge High Court recently, and the judge could hardly contain his frustration regarding the fact that the outcome of Rodriguez's appeal at the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein is still pending. The legal counsel for Rodriguez had petitioned the Court of Appeal, lodging an urgent appeal against a 342 decision of the full bench of the South Gauteng High Court, which was dismissed on the 31st of May 2019. So we're titling our discussion this evening Stalingrad Tactics when it comes to security branch officers in the pursuit for justice for victims of the apartheid apparatus. And the person who's in the forefront of this, as we've spoken on numerous occasions before, the nephew of the late Ahmed Timol, Imtiaz Kaji, joining us on the line. Imtiaz, great to have you on board again. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Ibrahim, and many thanks for hosting me once again.
Obviously, you know, anybody who's got their ears attuned to developments in South Africa would know that there's a bit of a pun or play on words if we talk about Stalingrad tactics in our political scene at the moment. We're not talking about that, but everybody's mind goes in a certain direction. Would it be accurate to say that these very same tactics are being used in other courts of law as well? well, perhaps just as effectively?
Well, I mean, Ibrahim, you know, Judge Monama, who is presiding over Rodriguez's criminal trial, consistently reminds us during every single court appearance that, you know, João Rodriguez remains innocent until proven guilty. But the reality, Ibrahim, is that, you know, from the 30th of July 2018, he and his legal counsels have been delaying progress in these particular matters. And it doesn't affect them at all because, you know, you and I as state payers are covering his legal fees. So they continue delaying this particular matter. They petitioned the full bench of the South Gauteng High Court, as you stated in your introduction, and a full bench consisting of three judges dismissed his application. Then in terms of the constitution, again, he was entitled to take it all the way to the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein, where the hearing was heard virtually on the 6th of November. And obviously, we eagerly await a judgment to be announced by them. And then if the judgment doesn't go in his way, Brian, you know, he's still entitled to take the matter to the Constitutional Court in Bloemfontein. And again, the point raised by Judge Monama is that he doesn't have a problem for the state to cover Rodriguez's legal fees, you know, during the actual criminal trial proceedings. But unfortunately, what his legal team are doing here, they're simply just delaying matters. And this is what Judge Monama is saying, that by them continuously delaying matters, the state should no longer pay his legal fees. Because if he's paying from his own pocket, then I'm sure his legal team will have a different approach to the matter. So this is unfortunate, the reality that unprecedented in a democratic South Africa, that for the very first time we've had an inquest, apartheid-era inquest reversed, and this was done on the 12th of October 2017. And since then, you know, they've continued dragging this matter because they're allowed to do so in terms of the constitution. And we continue patiently waiting, Ibrahim, for this matter to be resolved, you know, so that he can have his day in court.
You know, beyond the frustration, Imtiaz, obviously, of the family, like the judge acknowledged, beyond the frustration that came out from his own words, the fact that this is kind of possibly playing within the rules, obviously taking them to their its fullest extent. Does it mean that there's absolutely no recourse to counter these tactics?
No, most certainly. But this is what Judge Monama is saying, that the Department of Justice, you know, should watch these proceedings correctly and carefully and not just blindly continue just paying legal fees for Rodriguez. And that is what he and his legal team have been exploiting. And when I pursued the matter in terms of a PIA application, a Public Access to Information Act application, some time back, you know, they were forced to release an amount of more than 3.5 million rands that were paid to his legal fees. And this was more than a year ago, which meant that his criminal trial did not even commence, and yet they got paid 3.5 million rands. So most certainly, this is something that we continue reaching out to the Minister of Justice and the government of the day, that they should revisit these particular matters, because as they say, justice delayed is justice denied. And, you know, we as victims suffered during the apartheid era. And once again, apartheid era perpetrators seem to be getting a better deal than us, Ibrahim.
Just take us a few steps back, then, Imtiaz. Obviously, after, as we've spoken at length before, the inquest and you know, the overturning that occurred there, the progress of this court case or non-progress of this court case, the objectives of this court case and where it stands right now.
Look, it's very simple. You know, during the entire court proceedings in 2017, the presiding judge, Judge Balemotle, repeatedly turned to João Rodriguez, literally begging him to speak the truth, because that is basically what we want. We want him to make a full confession of what had transpired. And he was very adamant and very arrogant during the 2017 inquest, despite placing himself on the crime scene, simply saying, "I can't remember." So It took more than 9 months for him to have his first court appearance. And then thereafter, you know, the court cases continue taking place, delays occur. And like we said, you know, we now wait for the Supreme Court of Appeal. And then if the matter goes to the Constitutional Court, we're hoping that they rule in our favor. But the simple reality, Brian, is that, you know, as apartheid era victims, we continue reaching out to apartheid era perpetrators. The same, the family of Dr. Neil Agut, you know, in the Agut inquiry that is inquest that is just completed. The family wants the truth. They want answers. They want apartheid era perpetrators to take responsibility and make full confessions. But it's very, very evident that the apartheid era perpetrators take no responsibility, and hence, we feel that they must face the full wrath of the law during criminal proceedings.
Well, we also had, Imjaz, that the ruling party, when it came to the official statement released at the beginning of the year, objectives prioritizing the unfinished business of the TRC, does it give you some sort of hope that this is going to be taken much more seriously?
No, most certainly, because if I recall correctly, stand to be corrected, that I think it's for the first time in December last year, where the ANC's NEC actually came out publicly supporting charges to be laid against the party that are perpetrators. So obviously it is long overdue, long welcomed, and we expect their continuous support, that at the end of the day they must mount pressure on their cadres that have been deployed in the state, to make sure that they give a party that are victims justice in a democratic South Africa.
As far as these inquiries going on, Neil Eggert, also Ernest Dipale, we haven't spoken on those at length. Probably, on other shows, the developments have been looked at from time to time. If you just want to give us a bird's eye view of where those have started, what has been the progress so far?
Look, I mean, in 2016. January 2016, with the late Advocate George Bezos Ibrahim, with our legal team led by former TRC Commissioner Yasmin Suka, there was a joint presentation made to the NPA on the Ahmed Timol and the Dr. Neil Eggert's matter. And as we know, Dr. Eggert's reopening of the inquest only happened early this year. And my understanding is that all the evidence has been presented. There's a date that needs to be set for heads of arguments to be presented to Judge Makume. And the Dipali inquest has just started this particular week. But I'll continue providing updates on my website so that you and all the South Africans can keep abreast of latest developments, Ibrahim.
To go back to the security branch offices, a lot has been said about this, a lot has been written about this. The fact that whether it is, related to the Ahmed Timol case or the Neil Eggert case or other similar cases, the kind of answers provided by the security branch officers or former security branch officers, MCHAS, have been so strikingly clear that many analysts say that there's a kind of code of silence operational here. Or there's, there's also the instance here of a former security branch officer, Eddie Chauke, I believe, who said something in an interview a few years ago. In court, he says something drastically different. So are we able to pry into this, the reasons for this change in behavior? Is there something, much more compelling holding all of these individuals together? What allows us to make some sense of this code of silence?
Look, a very interesting question. I mean, my understanding is that there's definitely a code of silence. And until something gives, apartheid era perpetrators will continue not taking responsibility for their actions. And that is why the João Rodrigues matter is very important. And we should not feel apologetic because he's 81, 82, and if he faces, imprisonment. The simple reality is that he's taking absolutely no responsibility. And the same like Eddie Chauke and many, many others who testified in the Eggert matter. Their understanding is that, nothing can happen to them. And the fact that they've been, the TRC matters have been neglected for so long, they've simply felt that, they will simply turn themselves up, attend the inquest, and stick to their positions. And this is precisely why we want the full face of the law to deal with Rodrigues, so that they can clearly get a message from the judicial system that if they are not prepared to make full confessions, they're not prepared to speak the truth, as João Rodrigues is not willing to do so, then he must face the full wrath of the law. But something's got to give, Ibrahim, and I'm hoping that, once the state deals with Rodrigues, apartheid era perpetrators can think twice again, you know, of just coming and blatantly lying during a reopening of this particular inquest. Because as South Africans, we had a platform during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission for perpetrators and victims to, you know, to come together. And the reality is that victims throughout the country relive the horrors of the past. And very, very few apartheid-era perpetrators came forward to make full confessions. And we cannot accept the fact that all apartheid crimes were committed by Eugene de Kock alone. I mean, he was part of a system, and the system and its leaders needs to take full responsibility. So once again, the progress that we've made in the Rodriguez matter, Ibrahim, without the fact that it's been painstakingly slow, is still progress. Because there are many, many families out there, such as Nokutula Similani, Stanza Bopapi's family, that have not even obtained the remains of their loved ones. So we are fortunate that in my case, my uncle's body was handed over. In the case of Uncle Suleiman Babla Saluji, Dr. Hussein Hafiji, Imam Harun, the bodies were handed over. What about families like Nokutula Similani's mom, who's elderly and wants in her lifetime to see the remains of her daughter? And she's not going to do so because the Flag Plus operatives have destroyed her remains and are not prepared to make full disclosures. So, yes, it is very painstakingly slow, but as always, we have a lot of patience, a lot of perseverance, because progress only comes with the tests of our patience. And the reality, Ibrahim, is that, you see, they've taken us for granted for too long, thinking that our elders in our families and communities have mourned and grieved in silence, and that they felt that that was the best way in dealing with the loss of a loved one. But many of us today have a different approach. I mean, I know the daughters of Mopetla Mohape, a black consciousness leader killed in the Eastern Cape in 1976. He had two daughters, 1 and 2 years old, and his daughters today want to know about their father. They've remained in silence for many, many years, too afraid to talk about their father because it was too painful, understandably. But the reopening of my uncle's matter has given them a glimmer of hope. They want to know about their father. They want to know who was responsible for his killing. And more importantly, Brian, they wanted inquest finding reversed, because that finding states that Mopetla Mohape had committed suicide, and which is wrong. And this is the feeling of families across the country, like the family of Imam Harun in the Western Cape, the family of Dr. Hussein Hafiji in KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, Dr. Hafiji was killed after one day in police detention, and I'll tell you, I had seen photographs of his body, Ibrahim, and I can only imagine what the poor doctor had endured in 24 hours. So why should we not fight for truth and justice for our heroes and our heroines? Mm. If we're not going to fight for them, Ibrahim, most certainly nobody else will be doing so.
Two final questions, Imtiaz. You know, this term has been employed in a variety of settings, probably locally as well as overseas, for a variety of causes, and that is, you know, lawfare. And given, if you know, to use the term I'm using this evening, Stalingrad tactics used by these security branch officers, and given the immense patience, as you've spoken about, that's required, the nerves of steel, and obviously the costs that go along with that to be represented in court and to put that time aside to attend all the court proceedings, etc. Does this require, you know, specialist focus, resources to be put aside, contributions, etc., to go towards that direction to fight this battle effectively?
No, most certainly. Look, I mean, when I approached the Foundation for Human Rights in 2015, you know, I had basically compiled an entire docket on my own. And on that basis, you know, the legal team took over my uncle's matter. But the reality is that in many, many other families, they don't have people like me. For different reasons, they have not taken up the struggle and this challenge. So again, a very interesting question, and that is why what the Deputy Secretary General of the African National Congress, Comrade Jesse Duarte, has been stating, that this must be a national effort, Ibrahim. It can no longer be just me and the Foundation for Human Rights, Weber Wenzel Legal Resources Center, struggling on our own to deal with this matter. The same manner in which effort and interest is put into the Zondo Commission, and efforts needs to be put into processes like dealing with the unfinished business of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, so that the private sector with the legal firms and legal attorneys can also come on board, the universities, the academics. And this is what the ANC had done. has written currently to academics throughout the country for their law students to participate in these particular projects and initiatives. So it's not always a matter about just cost. Yes, I know cost is an important matter, but there has to be a political will. Mm-hmm. There has to be a national effort for us to understand the significance and importance of how did we end up living in a democratic South Africa, because you can be rest assured, F.W. de Klerk, Ibrahim, did not wake up one morning with a golden heart and gave us our freedom. Our freedom came about because of the young men and women in the country, many recognized and unrecognized, had sacrificed their lives in order for us to live in a democratic South Africa. And many will not even be mentioned. Many would not even go to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I mean, the ordinary workers, school students, teachers, academics, from all facets of our life, people contributed for this freedom. And most importantly, Brian, for me, the more we speak about our fallen heroes and heroines, the more it should instill in us the moral ethics to ensure that we love, so that we live in a democratic South Africa with the correct conduct, with the correct work ethics, so that we don't have these issues about corruption, not just within government, but also the private sector. That if we understand the sacrifices that those young men and women had made, then we would build this democratic South Africa, because that is what they fought for. They did not fight for positions in parliament or for tenders, Ibrahim. They had no idea as to what will transpire, but they were very clear that nothing was going to stop them. And that is why those men and women stood up, many of them to be brutally murdered and tortured to death, that we can live in a democratic South Africa and continue the struggle. Yes, it's no longer an armed struggle because the political landscape in the country has changed, but it is a struggle for the betterment of the life of all the people of South Africa, not just a selective few. So with those particular words, Ibrahim, I mean, I'd like to reiterate that there are families like myself throughout the country that work under the banner of the apartheid era victims family group, and we will continue this fight. And once again, journalists like yourself must be commended. The fact that you've made the time to give me this airtime is very, very significant, important to make sure that we never forget our martyrs and that we pay the ultimate tribute to them, which is fighting for truth and justice in their names.
Ibrahim, thank you so much for your time. Probably a year full of, beyond the court realm, full of other activities, all targeted towards the end of the objectives that you've just mentioned. This year marking also the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Ahmed Timol. We'll probably talk and hear more about activities planned in the weeks and months ahead. But for the moment, I thank you so much for your time. Shukran and assalamu alaikum.
Once again, many thanks to Ibrahim for hosting me. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.